Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. Hour number three is now underway. Text line 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the program. Time permitting, I'll get to your text throughout the conclusion of today's broadcast. Coming up in about 30 minutes from now, State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion. We close out the week with him every week. So big week in Alabama politics. Looking forward to that discussion. I'm going to take a brief break from politics right now, just for this segment, because it's an important time, and we'll do this from time to time in college athletics. But we have three. Often forget about Troy down in the Wiregrass, but Auburn, Alabama, and Troy are hosting what is the super regional portion of the NCAA baseball tournament coming up this weekend. And Hunter Johnson from Tide 100.9. And I guess if there was ever the poster child for the Alabama anti-Auburn troll, it would be Hunter, but he joins us now. Hunter, how are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm doing well. Appreciate you having me on.
Hey, thanks for making time. We do appreciate it. So St. John's coming to Tuscaloosa, Sol Thomas Stadium, and it's kind of looking at, hardly a ticket to be found for this. So the baseball mania has caught up to the state.
It's definitely the weekend to be talking about baseball. Both Tuscaloosa, Auburn, and Troy, there's not any tickets to be found. It is a very, very tough ticket. This is the first time that we've hosted a super regional since I was in college, and I'm 40 years old. So that says something for how long it's been since Alabama has done this. Really, really excited for it and can't wait until tomorrow.
Well, I guess the first question is, and you have this in college baseball where these unexpected teams get into these super regionals, and it's a sport where a lot of the household names that we expect to do well, I mean, you'll see those, but you'll see a lot of upsets in the regionals. St. John's, what are your expectations there?
I mean, I feel like it's good that both Alabama and Auburn are playing, top elite opponents this weekend. I think that's a good thing.
I mean, you think they're elite?
They're both going to be equally tested this weekend, Jeff.
You think Ole Miss is on par with St. John's?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Because I don't know. I mean, maybe you're right.
I would say that St. John's is probably about the same as maybe, a Milwaukee.
Right. Well, Milwaukee, we didn't know we were playing the Brewers in the regionals.
I thought it looked more like the Tool Company.
The way they played in their first two games, what makes it interesting, I don't think
anybody can beat anybody.
And these teams aren't as scouted. Like in SEC play, a lot about the pitchers, a lot about the tendencies of the players. And then you put these teams that you haven't seen, I'm sure you'd go through some tape and things, but they're not scouted like they are during conference play.
Yeah, and for instance, with St. John's, they went to the Tallahassee Regional, and we would have gotten Florida State if Florida, obviously if Florida State had won that regional. Well, Florida State doesn't throw their number one guy against St. John's. Well, St. John's beat them by one run. With Auburn losing their first game to Milwaukee, it's not like Auburn, was looking down on Milwaukee. Auburn threw the guy they've thrown
Marciano, right,
all season. Yeah. And it just, that team got hot. And teams can just get hot like this. And I feel like this is what, with NIL and everything, this is kind of what March Madness used to be. Like, you don't see as many upsets in March Madness anymore, but college baseball is kind of like that. I mean, there's still NIL in college baseball, but it's kind of like that one, good, wholesome thing that we have left in college athletics.
Right. Well, you have a viable, minor league farm system and just a limited number of players. And a lot of those guys who are good enough to play professionally for money, they opt for the major league draft. And college maybe is a little different because of that.
Well, yeah, and the major, I'm sorry, the minor league system is so much smaller than it used to be. And with NIL, kids can make as much money going to school as they would, you know, playing in a minor league system. And so, yeah, you see kids staying in school longer. I mean, essentially, for the guy that we have to hit the three-run home run for us, who broke his finger or broke his thumb, dislocated his thumb right before he hit a home run, we essentially, like, He's a fifth-year guy, could have gone and played, been signed a minor league deal. He wasn't drafted, but could have just signed a deal. We were like, if you want to come back, you can come back. We don't have any money for you, but if you want to come back, you can come back. Well, I'm glad that he decided to come back.
Well, let's talk about the Alabama team. And I my knowledge of the Alabama baseball roster beyond Justin LeBron is very shallow, but who should we be watching this week with the Super Regional?
Well, first of all, I want to say this, and I've said this to some of my friends who we go to every game, every home game at least. And I don't know that – I still don't think we're that good. I say that knowing that we are about to play in a Super Regional, and I might say it – we might be winning the national championship, and I'm going to be like, I still just don't know if we're very good. But, man, we are really good at winning baseball games. We have three high-end arms that we're going to throw this weekend. Hopefully, we only have to use two of them. Hopefully, win the first two and don't have to use up Church on Monday. But Tyler Fay and Zane Adams are both elite arms, both probably going to go in the top five rounds of the Major League Baseball draft. Miles Upchurch, the number three guy, is probably going to end up being, I would say, a first-round draft pick in 2 years. Glad we're going to have two more years. And it starts with that. That's when you have three high-end arms, you're setting yourself up for a really good opportunity to win some games because your pitching is going to keep you in games. After that, got a few relievers, but if we had gotten in a situation, for example, like Auburn did last weekend, I don't think we would have been able to get out of it because we wouldn't have had enough pitching. But thankfully, with this being a three-game series, we should be able to stay in it with our pitching. And then we've got dudes just get timely hit. We've got Johnny Lim from Australia who's broke his hand last week while he was our starting catcher. Now he's DHing, but I broke his finger. I've gotten to know his parents really well. They've been here for like a month. And they are just really, really good people. I love hearing his dad talk. But yeah, he breaks his finger last week and they shoot it up with, you know, like cortisone, I guess, and they make a little splint for it. And dude gets in on Saturday and Sunday of last week, ends up with four hits. I was joking with his dad. We should have broken his finger a couple of weeks ago. Maybe we could have hit over 300 this year. And then Brady Neal, transfer from LSU. He's going to be his home run against LSU. Against Oklahoma State last weekend will forever be, you know, he writ his name in Crimson Flame. That'll be one that we'll talk about for 20 plus years. And then you already touched on him, LeBron. Really good player. And then from Tuscaloosa, Eric Hines, starting left fielder, just is never going to, like, he's going to take advantage of every at bat he gets. And he's not going to miss out on anything. And dude just takes elite hacks and can freaking attack a baseball. One of the most exciting players that we have. And I'm excited that we'll have him for two more years as well.
Aside from Auburn Ole Miss and Bama St. John's, losing Georgia Tech losing and UCLA losing. I mean, this thing's wide open, isn't it?
It is. And that's what's, I mean, there's no team from none of the eight teams from last year are still alive. You've got an Oklahoma team. I can't remember if Auburn even played Oklahoma this year, but Alabama went to Oklahoma and won two out of three this year. And then they go to Atlanta and win that regional, walk it off in Atlanta against Georgia Tech. It's so wide open. You got UCLA losing in the first weekend. I mean, the fact that either Troy or Little Rock are going to be in Omaha is just really, really cool. And, you know, if Tuscaloosa was not hosting a regional this weekend, I'd probably be down in Troy because that's going to be super elite atmosphere.
Mississippi State, Georgia's intriguing because I know, like, Mississippi State kind of come in limping, but – that matchup there is that's a trap for
that seems really Georgia, loosey right? to Georgia. Seems really loosey to Georgia for me. Like, oh, they're so good, and then Mississippi State comes over and beats them. That it just seems kind of loosey for Georgia,
right? Because you know, they know each other a little bit, and it just seems like I said, like a trap for Georgia, especially in this tournament where this that kind of stuff is happening. The others, the Texas continues to be good. They were really riding high when Auburn played them at the beginning of the season. They've lost a little bit along the way, it seems like.
I mean, they're good. We got one. I think we salvaged the Sunday game. They don't really like super scare me. There's nobody that I'm like, man, I have like no desire to play them. I don't think we can beat them. I think that pretty, like we said, anybody can beat anybody at this point. I do think that Alabama has a really, really favorable chance to come out of the Super Regional. I'm excited for Barners to talk about how we had an easy path to Omaha, much like they talked about how we had the easiest path to the Final Four a few years ago when we made it. Like, really excited for that. That's going to be a lot of fun. And it's going to be nice. You know, Barners love to talk about how, you know, Alabama hasn't made Omaha since, you know, the Clinton administration.
Right.
Well, they're not going to be able to say that anymore. And then it's just going to turn to, oh, well, they had an easy path. Well, like, you know what? I was sitting here watching that St. John's Florida State game, and I was pulling for St. John's because, by God, I wanted to have an easy path. But, you know, maybe it's more noble of Barners to have to beat Ole Miss to get to Omaha.
Well, you're right. And I, you know, a 4 seed for Auburn, I thought was way, I mean, I'm Auburn barned up as much as anybody, but that seemed way, way too high to me.
Well, I mean, if y'all hadn't gotten swept by the university, y'all probably have been even higher.
Well, I mean, we split with Georgia Tech. We took one from Georgia. We took one from Texas. I mean, we won a bunch of series there in the end and kind of rebounded. But about midseason, I don't know what it is. And then, like, y'all it really turned
come on,
around.
Jeff. Y'all were riding super high coming in Tuscaloosa in late March.
We did. And that y'all was sort of like, was, you're right.
That was your thing because your basketball hadn't worked out. Football hadn't worked out. Y'all don't even care about gymnastics anymore since Sonny Lee left. And it was the baseball was your thing. And then you came in and you know, we got after that ass a little bit. We swept y'all.
Yeah.
So you were a little bit worried. But the thing is, you played a good enough non-conference schedule that your Auburn's RPI has been high all season, as has Alabama's. Auburn's been a little bit better. And so I think Auburn was totally deserving of that 4 seed. And this is not me trolling at all, I'm being honest here. I mean, you saw it in the way that Auburn was able to rebound after that Milwaukee loss and come out of the loser's bracket. I went into that, you know, the Monday thinking there was no doubt that Auburn wasn't going to come out of that region. I think we all knew that Auburn was going to come out of that region.
Well, it looked like it was Central Florida's to take, because I even after Milwaukee beat Auburn as bad as they did, you know, I just like, well, that's not going to last. But they played well enough to get to that last day. Well, you know, they almost had it on Sunday, but then Monday we get it out of there, and we kind of breathe a sigh of relief. So I don't know, like, I'm cautiously like optimistic.
Auburn loses that first game and ends up making it to Omaha. I think I really do expect y'all to beat Ole Miss this weekend. I hope it doesn't happen. I will absolutely be pulling for Ole Miss. But this seems like the typical, like, y'all kind of got things together. Now, Butch is a really, really good baseball coach. Like, of all the coaches at Auburn, he's probably my favorite. He is a good dude and a good baseball coach. I think that y'all kind of got things together, and I expect y'all to go to Omaha and can see y'all making a run in Omaha.
Yeah, I think Troy gets Little Rock. I mean, talking about people, someone who had maybe a weaker regional was Little Rock. I never was a buyer in Southern Miss in Hattiesburg, but
they just can't do it. I mean, we played them last year in Hattiesburg. In the loop, we went 2-out last year. We lost the first game in Miami, lose the second game, you know, Southern Miss is the host, and they lose their first game last year. They've hosted 2 straight years, can't get to a super regional, but yet they're, you know, gangbusters during the season. You don't want to go down there and play in Hattiesburg during the season. We learned that this year. But get to the postseason, they can't do anything.
Hunter, folks will find you on social media. How can they do so?
You can follow me at Burner L. Johnson on Twitter. You might probably get on there and maybe think I'm a lib. I promise you I'm not. I'm just a lib for Alabama.
Roll Tide, Hunter. Hunter Johnson, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Borst Show on FM Talk 106.5. And you gave me nothing in return. You know it ain't so hard to say. Would you please just go? Welcome back to the Jeff Borst Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning, 251-343-0106. Programming note coming up on Monday. State Representative Shane Stringer will be his turn in the rotation on Monday. Also on the program, Dale Jackson from WVNN, Yale Hammer News. You do that every Monday, so that's coming up. Probably be in Montgomery on Monday. As I said earlier in the program, we'll be up in Montgomery. 1819 News, 1819news.com is hosting a debate for the three top of the ticket races, competitive races in this Republican primary. Runoff set a week from Tuesday. Lieutenant Governor, AG, and United States Senate. Got Jared Hudson, Barry Moore for Senate. John Wall, Wes Allen in the lieutenant governor's race, and Catherine Robertson and Jay Mitchell running for the attorney general spot. So very intriguing matchups there. I think are, you know, some of those, will the conventional wisdom prevail or will we see some surprises? But we'll have maybe more of a preview for you then on a Monday for that. Leah writes, sports ball. California elections stolen and sports ball. California elections are less relevant to our lives in Alabama than college baseball. We know how that's going to end up. Steve Hilton will not be governor. Spencer Pratt will not be mayor. I'm just sorry, Leo. If that's what's important to you, reevaluate things. I always do these segments because I think culture is important to me, culture in Alabama. There's one unifying thing culturally. Maybe it's music, but it's certainly college athletics, primarily college football. But, you know, Leo, you have to just you have to just give us a little bit of grace here a few times a year for sports ball. I know. Stick to the issues. We had to be totally on our balls of our feet here on some of this. But we're going to take a break from time to time. That's sort of the genre here of the program. Mike, thanks for ignoring California. Enjoyed baseball talk 100 times more. Scooter, why don't you tell everybody why Spencer Pratt Hilton won't be elected? It's mostly because of mail-in ballots and fraud. I don't know about the fraud part. It's a blue state, guys. It's a blue state. Donald Trump is president. I think the Republicans are performing better. Like I said, my analysis of California is this, that it's sort of the first skirmish in a post-Trump electorate because they finally have moved on from that. And Republicans are performing much better in California than they will nationally in that they're exceeding their expectations. I mean, there's just way, 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 way more Democrats in California. If you had an outcome like you did in California, we have it in Alabama, that would be interesting. 251-343-0106. State Senator Chris Elliott coming up here in just a moment. Stick around. This is the Jeff Borst Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Yes, we are beer drinkers. Yes, we are hell raisers. People get out of our way wherever we go.
Come into your life like I do every night from the heart of your radio. I play a little sad and I play a lot of glad and a few old cheap songs. It's open to everybody out in radio land. Find the love just as true as mine.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this, what's left of this Friday morning. If you still want to try to get in, 251-343-0106 as we close out the week. Joining us now, he is our returning champion. Also, he is the, I guess, the nominee now for his the Senate seat he currently holds here in South Baldwin County. But my state senator, Chris Elliott, is with us. Senator, how are you?
I am doing well. Glad that primary election is behind us and very thankful to the voters of Senate District 7, or 32 for sending us back one more time with 73% of the vote.
Well, congratulations on that. I'm sure we talked about that a week ago. The news here, Supreme Court, right? That they essentially told this three-judge panel that you're not following our instructions from Calais, and kind of struck down Alabama's version of lawfare.
What a vindication for us and for the Alabama legislature as a whole. We are using the maps that we, a separate co-equal branch of government, are charged with drawing and that we drew legally. And that the courts tried to racially gerrymander against the will of the elected representatives of the people of the state of Alabama. And fortunately, we've got a president who appoints members to the Supreme Court who do not think that it is their job to legislate, but rather the legislature's job to legislate. And so I'm awfully thankful the U.S. Supreme Court certainly saw it the way Alabama saw it. I'm thankful for Attorney General Steve Marshall pushing as hard as he did in that case, and for Secretary of State Wes Allen for sticking up for us and making sure we got it done the right way, and that the people of Alabama will truly be represented by representatives that they choose, not gerrymandered ones, a federal court.
Well, and just how wrong the lower court got it here, and the headache that caused. I think it was the pro tem, Garland Gudger, said we need to get some of this money back that we put into this.
I could not agree more. I think we ought to ask for it back. They wasted taxpayer money. They completely and totally misinterpreted the law. And then you know what they did? They did it again and again to try to impose their will of an unelected federal judge as opposed to the will of the people. And this ought to be a message to the federal judiciary, really around the country, that states are not going to put up with that. That they're going to be challenged, that they're going to be challenged all the way to the Supreme Court, and that this Supreme Court is going to back up the states.
I mean, that's the way you put it into some of this. There's some kind of punitive action, and there's not much. These guys are appointed to the bench for life, but this has to be done. We have to pursue this for the sake of the future of this kind of system we have now.
Well, we do. And listen, I think the Alabama case is very important, just as the Louisiana case was very important in the Calais decision, by furthering the Supreme Court's stance on redistricting issues. And so as other states go through these challenges, hopefully their lower courts will realize, no, guys, they really meant what they said, and you can't do this. And so hopefully other states, will have these issues resolved at the district court or, at a circuit court level, federal circuit court level, and they won't have to go all the way to the Supreme Court, because those judges will see not just the Calais decision, but will see the decision in Milligan here and say, no, we don't want any, we're not going down that path, we're going to lose. And so hopefully they'll see that, and hopefully eventually we'll end up in a spot where we see these types of changes happen nationwide. And what has happened since the VRA, the Voting Rights Act, was initially passed has been an artificial, an artificial weight put on black voting populations and Democrat, representation that came along with that sometimes. And so we're seeing a reversal of that that will have a waterfall effect across the country. And I'm glad of that. I said that's what's supposed to happen. It was artificial to begin with.
Having watched these redistricting efforts over the years, I mean, that's always there's always sort of this albatross, that like, look, we had to do this way to check this box, check this box, check this box. We had to be very careful with what we say. We can't be transparent because there's so much risk adverseness in the system here. Did I think it's just bad? It's just not good government, or it leads to bad government. And hopefully this will kind of put a stop to some of that.
It does. And it will put a stop to what I think is this reverse racism, right? And so I'm not afraid to say that. I think that's exactly what was going on. We were artificially trying to increase the voice of a certain segment of this population. And here's the ironic thing. In the middle of all of this happening, what happened? We had an election where we picked up yet another black Republican in the Alabama House. So that's the irony of all of this is, as we try to artificially say, no, we need to, if you're black, you're a Democrat. We ended up electing another black Republican. We need to stop looking at skin color and do what Martin Luther King said and judge people by the content of their character.
Right. And a black Republican beating, and it wasn't just an open, it was an incumbent, right? Mm-hmm. And then that's what it happened up in the Shoals, guys. But this sort of industry that's always been an impediment to Alabama's constitutional obligations, which is a reapportionment and every census, it's always been, okay, well, we're going to do this, but we know we're going to get sued. Like there's a whole perverse incentive there where this sort of cottage industry, Mark Elias and Eric Holder and guys like that, sure, they're working on behalf of Democrats and Democrat interest. However, there was a self-enrichment here that really fueled this fire.
Oh, absolutely. And until now, until President Trump, until this United States Supreme Court, until an attorney general like Steve Marshall and his chief counsel, Catherine Robertson, we didn't have anybody that would really go to bat for us. And so, this has vindicated the Alabama legislature. I feel very vindicated in the maps that we drew originally and that we stuck to it, that they were legal at the time, that they were principally right as well. And I think that's an important thing, and that we stood up to, everybody saying, oh, no, you got to follow this rule and you're going to get sued. Well, fine. But this is the right thing to do. And ultimately, we were proven correct. And I'm glad of that. This country is finally, turning a corner from the last 50 years of running around with this namby-pamby political correctness and all of this, artificial, you put it as enrichment of certain classes at the behest of others. We've rolled back CRT and DEI. We are judging people based on their, their work ethic and again, the content of their character, not their skin color. This country's finally getting over itself.
Right. Well, it's just there's also the question of fairness here, that because we have to live under the system that other states don't. And why is it in place? Well, y'all were bad actors. Well, that was 60 years ago. And it's a lot of, you and I weren't even born yet, but we are still being held by this. And that just seems just wholly unfair, no matter how you try to make that argument.
It's the age old argument of sins of the father, right? And so our judicial system doesn't work like that. You hold individuals accountable for their individual actions, but certainly not what we did in 1950. And that's what the Voting Rights Act really did. If you go back and look at it, and this whole notion of preclearance where the Justice Department was having to sign off on things prior to us, again, the legislature, you know, passing them, we're finally out from underneath that. That was one of the reasons it was so important to handle the maps like we did. That and a timing issue together, you know, meant that we had to do what we did in the special session. And again, vindication all around, country's headed in the right place. I'm thrilled.
I think this, that they got greedy, that you look at Alabama, you know, had Milligan not come along, had they not been pushing for a second Democrat seat, because that's what this is. This is, we have a Congress right now where the margins are so thin between the R's and the D's, everything counts, and they were trying to socially engineer a bigger majority. They got greedy. If they had just relied and left 6-1, you and I would not be talking about this today.
You're exactly right. But also, I'm going to give credit to the president here, right? Who else would have pushed in the middle of an election cycle to go change maps, right? Make this push. And I give a lot of credit to him. And then, of course, the courts got greedy. The Democrats got greedy. And you have some Republicans, folks that were appointed, you know, by the president, by other Republicans, that just, I don't know why. I don't know what they're thinking, but their principles are off, and their decision making was wrongheaded. And again, the Supreme Court's, you know, shown in that the pendulum always swings. They got greedy, and so the pendulum is swinging the other direction, and we're correcting their greed.
We're joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. I guess the next question is, you know, and you probably hear it, getting to a 7-0 map, that's going to have to wait, obviously, but you think it happens in 2027?
I think it happens certainly by the 2030 redistricting. It may happen sooner, but we were not going to be able to do that in the special session we just had. That it would have restarted the entire court process and proceedings, and we would have ended up with nothing. And so you had to take a bit of an incremental approach and understand not just clock management from a time standpoint, but field position, right? And play the field position too. And that's exactly what we did. But yes, I think the fact that we're out from underneath the Department of Justice preclearance, and the fact that we have this Supreme Court ruling, lets us move forward with a 7-0 map. And I expect that the legislature will study that, look at that, and find the appropriate time to do that. But it's important to play the long game on this, right? I don't want us to get greedy either and end up in a spot where we do something that lands us back in court, where if we could have just waited until 2030, get it then, get it done, and it'll be like that for a very, very long time. And that's what we need to watch, not just clock management, but field position.
So you think that, you know, the 2028 election, that it won't, you think it could be as long as 2030 till 7-0?
Well, typically we redistrict every 10 years. That's the typical cycle. And so I think that is the certain thing, that we'll end up with a 7-0 in 2030, I guess 2031, by the time the census numbers come out, is when we'll be looking at that. So I know that will happen. The question is whether or not we do that. We do another redistricting here in the near future or not. That is certainly something that's up for discussion. We need to look at the merits of that, have those conversations with our attorneys. I'm all for getting all we can get when we can. But we also need to be very careful that we don't get greedy either. But I am certain we'll end up with a 7-0 map here in the next, you know, 4+ years. The question is just whether or not we end up with one in the next two.
Well, the problem with waiting till 2030 is the census isn't till 2030, and the map wouldn't go into effect till 32, right?
That is correct. And again, that's how typically this has been done, you know, for time immemorial, right, is we've redistricted every 10 years. All I'm saying is I am certain of that timeline. I am not certain of whether or not we redistrict before then. We may be able to do that, and those are discussions that are happening right now. And if that is something that we can do, we should do, but we need to be smart and deliberate and pensive about it and make sure that we do it in a way that guarantees success like we just had here, and not something that takes us, you know, takes us backwards, because I don't want to go backwards.
Because you would have to do, like, my assumption would be, I know we're putting the cart before the horse here, just like it is a new census. And when they draw the maps, they have all the hearings, they have all the meetings there, and I don't know where the new apportionment room would be, but I've done my show from the old one plenty of times in the state house with all the maps on the wall. But theoretically, you would have to do all the things you would have to do to turn around and do them 2, 3, 4 years later.
That is correct. So the question is the juice worth the squeeze? And the answer to that might be yes. Again, you pointed out how close things are in Washington. And if we feel like we need to and can move forward with that, we should absolutely look at it. If having Republican control, for instance, of Congress for 2 years or 4 years is in the balance of one more congressman from Alabama, that votes with Republicans, then yeah, we ought to go ahead and do it. We just have to go through the process that you just outlined, and we've got a legislative session coming up here in February. Let's look at it. Let's get our ducks in a row and let's move through the process. If that's something that that we're able to do legally, which I think is, as we watch these court cases come out and these decisions come out, is a very real possibility.
Senator, we got to leave it there, but we always appreciate your time. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks so much for having me. Y'all have a great weekend.
State Senator Chris Elliott there. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Dixieland. Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on what's left of this Friday. Coming up on Monday, Shane Stringer, state lawmaker from Mobile County, and also Dale Jackson, WVNN, and Yellow Hammer News. Real quick here, this I think is interesting. A coefficient poll conducted the 3rd and the 4th, so that would have been earlier this week on the day before yesterday. Barry Moore, 46. Jared Hudson, 37, unsure, 17, and both are very, very rate highly favorable. Moore with a 41-12 favorable over unfavorable, and Hudson with a 35-9 favorable over unfavorable. So, and that may be, I don't know whose poll that is, but it showed up in my feed, and I thought I would pass that along here. Coming up here shortly, Midday Mobile. Sean, what you got?
Hey, Jeff, first I got a question for you. Who was it you were talking to, I guess? Maybe it was yesterday's show, who said that he didn't see it. He said Barry Moore had a ceiling, but he didn't think Hudson did. Was that yesterday or day before?
Yeah, it was Sam Roberts from the Coleman Daily. And he's he runs these tracking polls, and he uses really, really big samples. And he's the thing is, I'm always skeptical of the methodology, but these last few elections, he's been very accurate, and he's been really good at predicting these races.
Yeah, and I completely understand. We've talked so many times in national or presidential elections about ceilings and lack of ceilings. I just wonder, I don't disagree, I just wonder how you poll the ceiling or the lack thereof, right? How do you?
Well, what I think it is sort of like, okay, you have a number of voters who are committed to a candidate, and you have a crowded field, mm-hmm. and then one of the candidates exits, and you don't really see a big bump out of that. You don't see any of the voters that were up for grabs moving to the other candidate.
But aren't we all, yeah, that's what we're trying to figure out, right? Where do the Marshall votes go?
I mean, do they stay at home?
I don't know. We've proven that every time that some percentage will stay at home when it's not their person in the runoff. They'll just
And then the candidate, like a third candidate, like a Pam Casey, Steve Marshall, like I feel like their support is like they're voting because that person is on the ballot. They're not showing up for any other reason other than they want to vote for their friend Steve Marshall or Pam Casey or whoever. And sure, some of those will go vote for the others, but there is a sizable chunk. It's hard to describe, just depends on the race. They're just like, well, you know, my guy's out. It's like when your team is out of the tournament, mm-hmm. you're not watching the tournament anymore.
No, it's funny. With sports teams, that's absolutely true, and I'll do that. With politics, I always go, if I voted in the primary, I guess there could be a situation I'd be traveling or so. Other than that, I always go for, if there's a runoff, I'm voting.
Yeah, but I just think human behavior is always interesting, particularly with an Alabama voter, unlikely voter, likely voter, whatever you want to call it. It's really hard to nail down.
Interesting stuff, man. We'll pick up that and run with it, because joining us in just a second, Chris Pringle, Pro Tem Chris Pringle, is going to join us. We'll talk about the decision, redistricting, and all that jazz coming up.
All right, y'all stay tuned. I got to get out of here. I will try to do better on Friday. Sorry, fellas, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. This is where